doing a podcast while I'm driving. Gonna run into someone while I'm crossing the highway. This fucking idiot from Rohan won't yield for me and I nearly died. What's going on? How do you like the new theme song? Pretty good, eh? Pretty good. Supes Oilers Ultimate pre- and post-game show. It's Tuesday. I didn't do a post-game Sunday night. The motherfucker started at 8:50. I don't care how fast the game went. That motherfucker started at 8:50 Mountain Standard Time. The damn near 11 o'clock on the East Coast. In St. John's and Newfoundland, if CBC ever taught me anything. No, wait. Newfoundland and Labrador. If CBC ever taught me anything, that motherfucker started at like half an hour later than that. Like 3 hours ahead? It was always such and such time, and it was Eastern, and then it was always, you know, 8:30 in Newfoundland and Labrador. I can't remember how it went. I don't even know what Labrador is. It's a dog. Anyway. Speaking of dogs, Stuart fucking Skinner. He played all right. He bounced back okay after I destroyed him on, I'm pretty sure, the last podcast or one of the last podcasts. And on the Twitters. That it looks like Elon's going to change back. Man, X is a terrible name. Like, it's how many times did I make the joke, X going to give it to you on this podcast? And I just gave up. Because it's like, hey, that joke's not funny. It's not landing with my audience. They're not DMX fans. So it's not landing. And it's just a dumb name. It's not a name. It's a letter. Anyway. Oilers win 1-0. They're up 3-1 in the series. So, there was a debate on the Twitters of, did the Oilers play that good defensively, or did they just get caved and get lucky to hang on? Here's my theory after having a day or a little bit more to think about it. They weren't at their best. LA was at their best. The ice was an absolute shit show. Which, if you play like the Kings and if you play like the Oilers normally do, then that's advantage LA Kings. And it wasn't anyone, that's Staples, this star, Crypto, I guess is what it's called now, this time of year. You got the Clippers playing, you got the Lakers playing, and the Kings playing. And they all played right in a 3-day span, all at home. In fact, there might have been some overlap there, if I can't remember exactly. But anyway, so that, my theory is that the ice was so bad that at some point in that game, the strategy from the Oilers was defend. Just defend. Make sure we don't make mistakes. Because I never felt like the Oilers weren't in control of their own game. I know the shot clock was heavily lopsided. Mike Kelly had his numbers after the game. Sports Logic, probably the best public data that's out there, had the Oilers win the expected goals battle in that game. That tells you all you need to know. Shot clock, fuck off. Expected goals, that's what I want to see. The Oilers won it. I think it was 1.47 to 1.31. That tells the tale. Slot shots, the Oilers actually had more slot shots in the game than the Kings did, which is a big one that might... And by the way, if you don't follow Mike Kelly, he is one of the top analysts in the league, maybe the best. I'm trying to think of who I said the other night. Bieksa is another one who's amazing. They're different. They're completely different from one another. Man, if Hockey Night was ever smart enough to get them on the same panel, oh, shit, some of the intermission stuff would be gold. And I know it wouldn't be the TNT guys, who are also phenomenal. Like, everybody hoped when TNT got the package that they would have a panel that was... that rivaled Inside the NBA. It doesn't rival Inside the NBA, but that being Ernie, Kenny, Charles Barkley, and Shaq, doesn't rival that, but it's hockey's version of that. It's probably the best panel there is. So good. Anyway, Mike Kelly's not that. Kevin BX is not that. Anyway. Mike Kelly's numbers said the Oilers were actually the slightly better team in the game. That's all you need to know. It was an adult performance by a team that doesn't always play mature. In fact, far more often than not, they don't play mature. They played mature. They made no mistakes. That was that. At some point, that became the game plan. Might have been after the first, might have been after the second, I'm not sure. But at some point, the message was sent to the team: no mistakes. Play as safe as can fucking be. No mistakes. And they made no mistakes. Yes, Stuart Skinner played well, but they really cut, they suffocated the Kings. They didn't give the Kings anything of quality. You know, that Matt Roy chance in the second was about the best the Kings had. That's it. I actually, oddly, because I'm usually the guy who's just rattled to no end about the officiating, I thought the officiating was fine. The Englund call was bullshit, yet Janmark gets high-sticked at the end of that play. So there technically was a penalty on the play. I'm with Kings fans that was a bullshit penalty. The penalty on Kulak was also bullshit and an even-up call. But I didn't think there was anything much in the game. If that would have been no penalties throughout the game, I would have been okay with that. I didn't feel like there was anything. And hey, I make fun of the Kings so much. They are probably the team I mock the most on this podcast. That on Sunday night, at least that was... how do I put it? They didn't embarrass themselves on Sunday. They might have been deserving of that game going to overtime, but they played, that's the way they should play. Cut out the bullshit, play hard, play physical, play fast. The forecheck was much better. That's what you need to do to beat Edmonton. Full props to the Kings and the way they played on Sunday. If they'd have done that, I don't know what their offensive creativity, but if they'd have done that through the first four games, rather than trying to play just like absolute shitheads, this series would probably be 2-2. Karma might have got them one of those games. Maybe it was game four. But karma definitely caught up with them, and they're down 3-1 because they didn't play a mature game in the first three. They played better in game two, but they still did the shit. They still just didn't cut the chicken shit hockey. And they got lucky as fuck to get out. I mean, really, we should be talking about a sweep right now. Yep, Skinner was phenomenal. The encouraging thing for the Oilers is, you know, McDavid had the 5 assists in game one, which, because I'm shitty at this, I never even mentioned on the post game. Yeah, you know, you're getting numb to things that McDavid does when you're not mentioning that. Hyman's hat trick, I didn't mention that either. I don't feel like McDavid's played near his best yet. Kings are doing a good job bottling him up. The Oilers are getting contributions from a lot of different places. You know, obviously the power play is the big thing. But I don't feel like McDavid, like 5-on-5, I think the Oilers got a lot more to give. Now, the Kings are a good 5-on-5 team. But I feel like there's more to give from the Oilers, and that's an encouraging sign for them going forward. It's very encouraging that they won that way, not because I feel like it's a good lesson for the group to learn that, hey guys, some nights you're not going to have your A game, and that's how you need to play. And that's the difference. The Oilers in the past, when they don't have their A game, they still try to play a freewheeling style. And it's like, guys, that's not going to win. You're not going to put up numbers tonight. You need to just focus on cutting out the mistakes. Finally, we see a performance like that. Hopefully, they get that figured out. Hopefully. One little tweak that I would make if I were, by the way, getting Sam Carrick out of there. Thank you, Chris. That was night and day watching DR play in game four from what Sam Carrick had been giving them. I like Sam Carrick. He can't keep up. DR is not much better of a skater, but he plays quicker. Sam Carrick doesn't play with any kind of quickness. I think they'll still need Sam Carrick. I think a little bit of that, too, might have been that Sam Carrick didn't go to bat for some teammates, although I'm not going to in game three. But then again, he's not the kind of guy who wouldn't do that, so give him the benefit of the doubt on that. I would have liked to have seen Carrick go after a few guys in game three after Nuge gets slew-footed and Lizotte slew-foots Kane and the headshot on Kane. Like, the Kings were kind of asking for it, but whatever. But the one tweak that I would make if I was Chris Knobloch, Warren Fogle, fourth line right wing, puts Janmark back on the left side where he's more comfortable and bumps Dylan Holloway up with McLeod and Perry. That's the optimal lines. That's where it should land, right there. Holloway needs a little bit more ice. Fogle, if you're not going to have him in the top six, and for whatever reason, I've said this a million times, when he's in the top six, I feel like he doesn't try to do more than he needs to. He just simplifies his game because he trusts his line mates. When he's playing bottom six, I feel like he's trying to do more than he needs to because he thinks he's got to carry the load. And he can't be a play driver. He just, for whatever reason, he can't do it. He's got to be a complimentary guy. But at least if you've got to have him in the bottom six, at least put him on the right side where he's much more effective. So fourth line right wing is where I'd have him. Him, Janmark, and Ryan, that is a line that's not going to hurt you at all. And give Dylan Holloway more ice time. Holloway is the better fit on that line with McLeod and Perry. Now, frankly, I would actually flip Fogle and Perry. Perry, frankly, hasn't been too good. Now, are we expecting Corey Perry to be good? I don't think so, but I felt like he'd be more involved than what he's been so far. I'll say that. Had a great chance at the start of game four. That was actually a really underrated save by Can't Make a Save in that game. Man, that sucked. I didn't get to do... Oh, man. I fully expect... Damn it, the Oilers fans better be all over Can't Make a Save tomorrow night. All fucking over him. Crucify him. This is your chance. If I'm not mistaken... now I'm trying to think. Has Rittich played in Edmonton since the stick toss? I'm pretty sure he did. I mean, he played in the bubble, but there's no fans. He played the exhibition game against the Oilers. Again, no fans before the playoff bubble started. Was he gone from Calgary? I think he left Calgary after the 21 season. He played for the Jets. I don't recall him playing with the Jets against the Oilers. Played for the Preds. And I think this might be, unless he had a game, did he make a start this year for LA? That was in Edmonton. They had that game. Shit, I can't remember when LA came to town last. I thought it was right before the trade deadline, but I could be wrong on that. But yeah, a playoff crowd should be crucifying that guy. Oilers fans, don't let me down. There should be non-stop David Rittich chants all night. And not fucking Rittich, Rittich. No. No. Be fucking better than that. That does nothing. That does nothing. That chant is like fucking Oilers fans have been doing that since at least 97. It's done. Okay? I loved it. When I was 16 and I was at all the playoff games, I fucking loved doing that. It's done. It's done. It's been done a million times. Everybody does it. Here is your chance to be creative. You got a fucking dipshit in between those pipes who tossed his stick in celebration after a shootout win in a game in January where he didn't stop a puck in the shootout. Two pucks hit the post and the other one he made a poke check. The epitome of a fucking loser. Let him hear it. Be all fucking over him. Give him the Bronx cheer with every stop. Like, all fucking over him. He has earned it. Let's fucking go. I want multiple times. Like 20 times in the game total. I want to hear a very deafening chant of toss your stick. Let him fucking have it. One more thing before I wrap this up. I do want to actually talk a little bit about what's going on in the other series on this show, even though that's it's not a BS show. BS show. It's not a BS. The S stands for show. I don't know why I said a BS show. Cody Ceci. Did I actually read this last night? I had trouble falling asleep last night. So, I guess David Staples said this. Called Cody Ceci their second best defenseman.
And people responded with all the stats. Like, no, he's literally their worst defenseman. And that doesn't mean that he's played bad. But what the fuck is with this media contingency? This desperation to say, no, everybody's got it wrong. Cody Ceci's actually pretty good. No, he's not. Even eye test people, friends of mine who are eye test people and don't look at analytics, if I can speak English, they have begun to say this and notice this more and more and more. And trust me, it's not to appease me, because these same people were arguing for him to me before, saying, I think you're too tough on him, man. He's not that bad. It's a truck that just went by, you probably heard, as I pull over to finish this podcast. Yeah, man, and here's the other thing about Cody Ceci. The last 2 years in the playoffs against LA, those have been his best series, both years. He wasn't bad against Calgary, but he wasn't, like, a standout, and then he was terrible against the Avs. Now, in fairness, Darnell Nurse that year was pretty bad. But even if you're going to, like, even if you're going to say Cody Ceci's playing well, which I don't think he's hurting them, but again, a team that doesn't have much of a forecheck, yeah, that's great that you're playing well. Like, that's, the Kings need to forecheck the Oilers D harder. He's still the sixth best defenseman in this series. He's not better than Brett Kulak. Vinny Desharnais has played the best hockey of his career in these four games. He's not better than Nurse. Like, as much as I'm killing Nurse a lot of nights, he's not been better than Nurse. Nurse has been a rock in three of the four games. Like, he's not better than Ekholm, and he's not better than Bouchard. Where does that leave you? Sixth. Are you going to make the argument that he shouldn't come out of the lineup? Okay, I will listen to that. But he's not anywhere close to the second best defenseman in this series for the Oilers. He's not better than Ekholm. He's not better than Bouchard. He's not better than Nurse. Kulak is playing phenomenal, as he usually does in the playoffs. At best, he's fifth. At best. This desperation to pretend that he is better than anyone. It is. And David Staples is the one who wrote the piece. I don't think David Staples is trying to champion for anyone, or trying to help out anyone in the organization, make them look better, whatever you want to call it. I saw that fucking Kurt Levens quote tweet it, though, and basically, like, yeah, some, not all of us were saying that he needed to be traded. Like, you're, like, mind-blowing. These fucking losers are taking a victory lap on this when he's not anything good. There is nothing to suggest he has been great in this series. And trust me, again, as hard as I am on the guy, I want nothing more than to be wrong. Look, like, my track record, Stuart Skinner. I was ripping Stuart Skinner after game two. I fucking immediately put out a tweet after game four, quote tweeted it, and said, this aged like milk, and I'm so happy about it. Because I was. I'm an Oilers fan. Cody Ceci in 2022 was literally their best defenseman. Not just the best bang for their buck, literally their best defenseman that season. Cody Ceci was awesome in 2022. I would love to see Cody Ceci get back to playing the way he can. I'm not seeing it. I still think, is this person seriously going to try and talk to me? Like, what are they doing? I'm on the phone. And I'm not on the phone. I'm on a podcast. keep driving, Farmer Fred. I have no interest in talking to you. This guy drove by me, went up to an intersection, turned around, and acted like he was going to come talk to me. And then slowly drove by to see what I was doing. I'm on the phone. Now, he doesn't know I'm doing a podcast, but still, I'm on the phone. I grew up on a farm and going to school, and I call my hometown Marwain, town of, you know, 500-600 people. I know that it's weird for people from a small town to see a truck that they don't know. Like, it's just for whatever reason. I don't think there's any malice behind it, but it's always just like, what's this? Who's this guy? What the fuck's going on here? Like, you're robbing them or something. Like, no, I'm just a salesperson who's on a phone call on the side of the road. Anyway. I think the Oilers wrap it up in five, but I've been very wrong on this series. I did think they were going to win on Sunday. I did think they were going to win and it was going to be a close one and they were going to pull it out. So that's essentially what happened. Obviously, I was very wrong on game three. I thought from all the post-game comments, felt like they weren't getting it. Clearly, it was just comments that we're not going to give the media anything. We're going to pretend like we're fine, even though we know we can do a lot better after game two. Game three, they played. Game three was easily their best game of the series. I said after game one, they got away with playing like shit. LA was worse than they were, but they weren't. That doesn't mean they were good. Just LA was worse. I think they wrap it up, and I think they know they can play a lot better than what they did on Sunday, even though they, you know, played the mature game and won because of it. Yeah, I think they wrap it up. I don't think it'll be a blowout or anything, but I think, you know, a 4-3 game, maybe 4-2 with an empty net or something like that is what they end up winning by. Vital to get it wrapped up, too. You don't want to go back to LA. Travel. Hearing more and more that travel plays a big part in how these, you know, how it impacts. I mean, it's a factor, but I don't think you think about it as much in the playoffs as you do in the regular season, because you think, well, series to series, like, it's the same travel for both teams. Yeah. But like hearing Kevin Bieksa talk about how he thought that the Canucks having to go back to Nashville in 2011 for game six actually cost them the series. Like, cost them the cup. Sorry. It's like, that's interesting. So now I'm big on it, and it's why I want to see the Canucks win their series, but I want Vancouver and Nashville to go seven. Spoiler, I think Nashville wins tonight. And a lot of people are saying, oh, they're cooked after that one. That's such a deflating loss. Man, common sense suggests that all Andrew Burnett has to do is go into that room and say, guys, we're outplaying them. Now, he needs Yussi to stop some fucking pucks for him. But the Preds are outplaying the Canucks. The last three games, the Preds have been the better team. The Preds have been outplaying them. And the Canucks, Hughes is getting beat up. Pettersson has no-showed so far in this series. Like, the Canucks are very lucky to be up 3-1 in this series. Very lucky. It should be 2-2. At best. You could argue it should be 3-1 Nashville. Anytime that's happening in the playoffs, it seems like that luck burns you before you're able to get out of it. Maybe the Canucks, I still think it's going seven. I think the Canucks pull it out in seven, but I think we still got some track left in this series. Hasn't been good. Hasn't been a good series. But I think there's still... Oh, here comes another big truck. It's a co-op truck. It's... Yeah, it's not a good series, but I think there's still a long ways to go in it. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Vancouver. Oh, I had my recording interrupted there. But it reminds me of Vancouver and Dallas in 2007. Like, that series, boring as shit. Canucks got a 3-1 lead, had home ice advantage. Dallas won game 5 in overtime. I think Brandon Morrow got the winner. Game 6, they... can't remember. I want to say they shut out Vancouver. And then Vancouver got them in 7. That's where it feels like this series is going. Dallas in that series, same thing. They were actually better than the results they got in the first 4 games. And then they ended up taking it 7. And for the Oilers, I want to see this go the distance. At least 6, so that Vancouver has to travel. Because that's pretty gross travel, Vancouver to Nashville, going back and forth. So at least go 6, but having that 7th game to beat them up just a little bit more, that would also suffice. Let's see. Rangers swept the Caps, had it. Panthers 4-1 over Tampa. I thought Tampa would put up more of a fight than that. I really did. I really whiffed on that one. Hey, that's what happens when you call upsets. I also look like I'm going to whiff on Boston-Toronto. Could be a galvanizing moment. I keep using that word. But it could be a galvanizing moment for the Leafs if they pull this one out tonight. Remember this, too. 2018, Leafs are down 3-1 to the Bruins. Went in, won game 5 in Boston. Now, there's nobody left from the 2013 team, but same situation. The Leafs twice in the last 3 times previous that they've played Boston have come back from 3-1 in the series to force game 7. This time around, I think if the Leafs forced game 7, I don't know, you know, I keep betting on them, and they keep humiliating me. I just, at some point, the one thing I did not factor into saying the Leafs would go on a deep run, though, I don't like Sheldon Keefe. Fuck, I don't like Sheldon Keefe. I think he's a regular season coach. I don't think he has a fucking clue what he's doing in the playoffs. They badly needed him gone after last season. They went back with him. They've, ever since, Leafs fans don't want to hear this. A lot of people don't want to hear this. You know what? The Leafs were trending up and up and up with Mike Babcock. And ever since Sheldon Keefe became the coach, they've just flat. This is what they are. Every year. And I think Keefe has the mentality that because they're under so much pressure in Toronto, I'm going to be super soft on them at every turn. Bud, it's time to go to the fucking whip. And he didn't. Again. For the millionth time. This does not feel like a group who you should be soft on. Anyway, I got to wrap this up because I got to go. let's see. Florida, Tampa, got that one wrong. Rangers, I called the sweep. It was a sweep. Carolina probably wraps it up tonight. I had that one in 5. Colorado, Winnipeg. Even though I was very confident in Colorado winning that series, I didn't even think that the speed of the Avs would cause this much disparity. I thought the Jets would have times where they'd slow them down. Nope. Just the Jets have been slowed down all series long. Maybe not game 1, but since game 2 started, the Jets... The Jets have been super slow. The Avs have been super fast. It is night and day, the speed difference. I think the Avs wrap it up tonight. I don't know where the Jets go from here, though. It's not like they're in a bad situation. They got Hellebuck and Scheifele signed. They've got a good, pretty young group. Ehlers is the only one that I don't know where you go from here with Ehlers. But yeah, Jets are in a good good spot moving forward, but there's going to be some pressure, like, okay, we haven't won a round now since 2018. Let's get going here. Dallas, Vegas. I guess this is the last series I haven't talked about yet. LTIR shit aside, what a fucking series. It's far and away the best series of the playoffs. It's the only series that's 2-2. When has, I'd have to think, and I haven't got time to think, when the last time that happened, that only one series has been 2-2. But I feel like, knock on wood, because I'm not cheering for Vegas. Knock on wood, it feels like Dallas is taking over that series. It feels like the first two games, Vegas got a little lucky to get out of Dallas up 2-0. The luck kind of stayed with Vegas through game three as Thompson was standing on his fucking skull. And it felt like when Wyatt Johnston got that winner in game three that the series momentum totally shifted. And not only that, they figured out where to go on Logan Thompson. Upstairs, it's open. Put everything upstairs. They started going upstairs. They won last night. Vegas gave them a good go for about the first 30 minutes last night. And Dallas weathered that and then just took over. And as soon as Dallas pushed back and it was done, Vegas had no response. Other than Mark Stone, I don't think the Golden Knights are a very healthy club. I think Stone is 110%. He looks tanned, refreshed. It's almost like the guy didn't have an injury. It's amazing. By the way, as I said on Twitter, his wife posing with the fan who had LTIR 61 on the jersey. It's not their fault that the league's a shit show. It's not their fault that the league's just a fucking mess. It's not their fault that the league's intentionally not looking into his injuries. Quote unquote injuries. It's not his fault. It's not his fault. It's not his wife's fault. I don't blame them for doing it. I don't like the Golden Knights, but I don't blame them for taking advantage of it either. This is an issue with the league. And I wish people would stop overlooking the little details of, like, why are 31 other teams not doing it? Like, I know this isn't a very intelligent league, but there's a few organizations that are definitely smart enough to take advantage of the same rule and aren't. Weird. Super weird. Super weird how it's so obvious that the Golden Knights and Mark Stone do this and the league does nothing. Super weird. Super weird how any media member from a rights holder doesn't say shit. Super weird. Anyway, gotta go. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.